Hi, and welcome to Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and I'm really excited to have Dr. Barb Dupree on with us today to talk about the value of orgasms and all kinds of neat stuff about menstruation, too. This episode of Her is sponsored by WellFit Malibu, the premier healthy lifestyle retreat destination where you can recharge your life hiking and frolicking on the majestic Calamigos Ranch overlooking the Pacific Ocean just outside of LA. Learn more at WellFit.com.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
All right. On this episode, we're thrilled to have Dr. Barb Dupree on with us to discuss orgasms and menstruation, all kinds of neat new research and everything. Oh my goodness. So Dr. Barb Dupree is a gynecologist with a focused practice on women's sexual health, as well as perimenopausal and menopausal women's health. She's the founder of MiddleSexMD.com, a website for sexual health and wellness, providing information and products promoting women's sexual health. Yay, we love that. Her book is Yes, You Can, Dr. Barb's Recipe for Lifelong Intimacy. Dr. Dupree, welcome to Her. Wow, we've got some great stuff to talk about, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Okay, let's talk about the female orgasm, for crying out loud. Now look, orgasms have an important role in a woman's intimate relationships. Duh, I call that a keen grasp of the obvious. But the evolutionary roots of the experience have been, well, difficult to uncover. What's going on here? And so a recent study just came out. I love the title of the journal, and I'm sure you got a giggle out of this one. The Journal of Experimental Zoology. We're back in the zoo again. And these researchers conclude that the response originated, and that is the orgasmic response, originated in mammals more than 150 million years ago as a way to release eggs to be fertilized after sex. Good grief, they were getting it on 150 million years ago. And,
that's right.
You know, there's so much to this. I mean, so many of these animals actually had their clitoris, which is where we get so much of this response from, actually located inside the vagina, and then it migrated out. Good grief. Dr. Dupree, help us understand what happened here.
Yeah, I think this was some really kind of fascinating information that got shared, and, you know, thanks to all the animal science that's gone on for so many years. But yeah, it was, to summarize, what they have found is that originally, maybe in humans, but in many animals, actually intercourse triggers ovulation. So the act of having intercourse and the release of some of the hormones, probably specifically oxytocin, maybe prolactin, those signals allow ovulation or release of the egg. So they obviously tightly connected intercourse, coitus, reproduction with ovulation, and it was probably out of necessity at the time for species continuation. Obviously now, as human females, we ovulate on a regular, typically predictable basis, and it's completely separate from intercourse or reproduction. So it's interesting how the theory of, you know, necessity, continuation of the species, intercourse triggering ovulation and conception, and now we see that we don't see intercourse as solely a means of continuing the species. It's really more for pleasure. And the theory is that the clitoris initially resided inside of the vagina, and so achieving an orgasm was maybe important for release of some of these hormones, what happens with the pelvic floor, enhancing ability for conception to occur. Again, now that's less critical path because we ovulate in the absence of intercourse as well.
Well, so what, let me see if I can, you know, make some sense of all this, because I'm sure some of our Her podcast listeners are saying, say what? And now let me just get this straight. Okay. So are you now saying that orgasm and intercourse are two kind of, you know, in certain respects, different things, currently, today, 21st century, in a human being, that you can have intercourse and with eggs being released on a cyclic basis, on a monthly basis, that if that intercourse takes place when the eggs, you know, when all of this is timed just appropriately, that there you have, you know, your pregnancy and we can kind of continue this lovely civilization we have. Meanwhile, with orgasm may or may not take place during that intercourse because, interestingly, a 2010 survey noted that almost 36% of women said that they hadn't had an orgasm in a heck of a long time, especially when they're actually having sex. So they almost seem like two separate things. And that if you have orgasm and intercourse at the same time, lucky you.
Right.
Now, does that make sense?
It does make sense. And there was another recent article that actually talked about measuring the location of the clitoris from the opening of the vagina, and that the further you went, the less likely you were to be able to have experience an orgasm with intercourse. So, you know, I think we're back to women are pretty complicated.
God, here we go. You're absolutely right. You know, we are complicated, but I think it's really important that, you know, women really understand that things that are fount of knowledge about this is expanding now. And what we're now seeing is that you have to go out of your way to really understand how you're going to get orgasm, that anatomically your clitoris may be pretty far away from your vagina, which means good luck getting an orgasm, and that you have to maybe work it with yourself or your partner to be able to have orgasm separate from the intercourse because it may not be happening with the intercourse. And that, I think, is really important. That's a big message out there, because I think a lot of women are really frustrated when they're saying, well, you know, he's having a blast and I'm basically, you know, kind of sitting here going, say what, right? So what do you say to them, Dr. Dupree?
You know, I often start out a conversation with women in their sexual health and asking about ability to arouse an orgasm. And if they say, yes, I am able, can you have an orgasm with intercourse or not? Or if women say, it's really hard for me, because I think there's a huge misunderstanding, lack of knowledge that the majority of women, they can't have an orgasm with intercourse. But, you know, the big screen movies and the books we read don't necessarily allude to that. So I think for men, they don't understand that. And for women, they often don't understand that, you know, what the clitoris is a little bit removed enough that it needs direct attention stimulation in order to achieve an orgasm. So it's basic, but it's a missed step of knowledge often. And I think maybe because that's a detail women aren't necessarily sharing with each other, or mothers and daughters aren't sharing.
Ooh, now there's a little thought. Well, there's two different things. It's all about messaging. You made me really have an aha moment here when you said the way it's really portrayed in movies and all the rest of it, where you see, you know, someone really rocking it here, and it looks as though she's having more fun than he is, practically. Well, that's not necessarily true in real life. You know, it just depends. And I think the stereotype is that, you know, you're out there and you're just letting it, you know, happen, and you will have an orgasm just because he's handsome and you're really, you know, getting it on there. Not necessarily so. There's that issue. The other issue that you brought up, this is such an important issue. Are we really talking about this? Or, you know, girlfriend to girlfriend, women to women, mother to daughter, sister to sister, however we're doing this, are we really saying what's actually happening, or are we just sort of wondering, or are we ashamed, or are we freaked out? And then the subset to that is, are we really having a frank conversation with our partner? Like, you know, I'm glad you're having a great time, I'm not. What do you think about that?
I do think we've not been forthright about communicating this. And I think partly because rather than giving it a clinical significance, and I just even like the term sexual health, that it really belongs in a medical practice between a patient and a provider, and it's not a dirty closet secret, sex store kind of a secret. But I feel like it's lost its way, and culturally it hasn't had a place in healthcare, so to speak. But when women can seek that information via a healthcare provider, have the comfort of asking and having a frank conversation, I think there's value in that. And that's where I think we need to place some of this knowledge for women, is put the burden on even our pediatricians and talking to young women about emerging sexuality, and then in women as they're journeying through sexuality, that we make sure we're enlightening them along the way.
Oh, I think that's important. And you and I are both physicians. And I think that both of us in our training, and then finally when we kind of got out there doing our thing, we both realized how little we were ever trained to talk to someone about their sexual health. I mean, just about nothing, other than if there was pathology, like you have a, you know, tumor growing out of you or whatever. We never really sat down and said, so, how's your sexual health? Yikes. And I think that the grand majority of physicians just avoided the entire topic because, quite frankly, we didn't have an educational base. What are you going to talk about? You know, but, you know, having people like you around, you know, as an expert in this field, someone who really addresses this in a big way, is so terribly important. I want to make sure that everyone knows that we're talking to Dr. Barb Dupree, who's an expert in all things sexual health. Her website is Middlesex MD. That's middle S-E-X and then capital M, capital D.com. And you'll also find there some great products to be able to help enhance your sexual health as well. Go through the whole website. It's educational. It's fabulous. And she provides wonderful information on all things sexual health. This has really been incredibly enlightening on the whole evolution of our knowledge about orgasms. Now I'd like to move on to another topic, because we've got some new conversation about this, and it's menstruation. Oh, yeah. All I could think about, Dr. Dupree, is those wild and crazy, you know, ads that have always been around with some young woman, you know, prancing around in a white bikini or a white dress. It's like, what? When we talk about menstruation, and it also made me think that, you know, this wonderful episode of her is sponsored by WellFit Malibu, the premier healthy lifestyle retreat destination, where, yeah, you can hike and frolic, but you don't have to wear white on the majestic Calamigos Ranch overlooking the Pacific Ocean. So make sure to run on over to WellFit.com. So let's talk about menstruation. So this has really become quite the political and public policy hotspot too, with everything from 8 states, including the District of Columbia, moving to eliminate sales tax on pads and tampons, to moving it into a public policy arena where these kinds of items are now classified as necessities, very much the way that, for instance, New York classifies men's products like Viagra, Rogaine, and dandruff shampoo as necessities, crying out loud. Of course, the pads and the rest of it are. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. You know, it's always a little overwhelming to wonder what layers you need to put into place to really implement this. But even using my HSA card, you know, to purchase those kinds of products seems to me like it should be allowed as a medical expense, so to speak. Because, you know, nobody's doing this as a luxury. This is really a necessity. And it is obviously a gender issue. So, it'll be really exciting and interesting to see how looks like lawmakers are going to get involved in this. And but they've got a lot of industry behind them, I think, in trying to figure out how to move forward. And, you know, some really strong women who are voices out there who I think are going to do the right thing and try to move this forward.
Ooh, and I think it really, you know, had a watershed moment when Donald Trump complained about the tough questions of Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly at a Republican debate, saying that she had blood coming out of her wherever. And then hundreds of women and men responded in force on Twitter using the hashtag periods are not an insult. And I think that this is another, you know, kind of a transitional evolutionary movement in our understanding. What do you think about that, Doctor?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a conversation that needs to be advanced as well. And I it's going to happen. I think there are enough women who are just ready to bring it on that this conversation is going to be had, and it should be. It feels again like it's one of those kind of quiet, in the background. You know, I mean, I can think of 20 years ago hoping to get out of the drugstore, or, you know, you bury them in your grocery cart as though you don't have tampons there. And, you know, why is that? That shouldn't be the way it is at all. And I think about I think about other cultures and the impact of, you know, missed school and, you know, literally the cultural impact. And America is multicultural. We have a lot of cultures represented here. So to figure out how to do this well, I think is going to be really important.
Well, even Madison Avenue got into this. I mentioned laughingly about, you know, the classic ad of the woman running around in white. Well, you know why, duh. Well, now they've begun to replace those silly ads with women, you know, sitting at a computer working away. Maybe they might be in the gym, you know, working out, and they're not wearing white. And I just think that that's a really smart thing, too, because after all, Madison Avenue realizes that women spend over $3 billion on sanitary protection and products. And that's just a huge, huge place. The other thing, too, is a little sidebar between you and me and being a gynecologist. I maybe you can, you know, commiserate here with me. I think that as women get older and are really representing a huge group now that are not just about menstruation, but also about bladder control, that the bladder pads, which really for all intent and purposes are kind of menstrual pads anyway, also need to be seen as necessities, and that there should be no sales tax on those as well, and that we need to have a conversation about that too, because for crying out loud, I'd love to see the numbers on that with Madison Avenue, because, you know, there are over 70 million boomers out there rocking and rolling, and I think that a whole lot of them are getting help from that. But that being said, let's move on to something else. Good grief, it's high tech time, 21st century. We've got apps. Yes, we have an app for that. So we have menstruation, we have an app for that. And we have one called Clue and another one called Period Tracker. And it really helps women keep track of their menstrual cycles. You and I must be laughing our heads off when we hear this, because how many times have you and I told a woman to go get a little spiral bound notebook and write down, you know, the dates of your period? Oh, geez. And of course, they never do, because it's just a pain in the noogies. Well, now we have these apps. Do you use any of these?
I do, and I recommend them for, I have many perimenopausal women patients too, where periods are less predictable, and, well, I can't exactly remember when I had a period, so I recommend those for women, and, you know, I have three daughters. I think it's a good idea. Now, we don't always have to know precisely when a last period was, but when you're looking at certain conditions, an understanding of period regularity is really helpful. So I think they're a great way. And, you know, we're all about knowledge and tracking things. So why wouldn't we want to be tracking that too? There are apps
for bladder.
I think
that's brilliant. Oh, yeah, for bladder, too. Absolutely. And I really think that women, you know, with their Apple Watches on now and, you know, with all of our smartphone devices and whatever, I mean, let's use this. These are technological services that I think we should all be taking full advantage of, to say the least. Now, here's a little, you know, a little thorn in my side, and that is the period-proof panties. Okay. The classic kind of answer to this was good luck. and now they have companies like Thinks. That's T-H-I-N-X, a company that makes absorbent, period-proof panties that are meant to be worn without tampons or pads. Interesting. Kind of pushing the boundaries of period engineering and advertising using images of a runny egg yolk or the insides of a grapefruit to evoke menstruation or the female anatomy. Oh my goodness gracious. So we've got all kinds of interesting ways of starting to address what goes on with just undergarments. What's your recommendation?
Well, I think somebody needs to come up with some improvement along the way. Again, I go
Yeah,
back,
you think?
I was one of three girls. I have three daughters. You know, we all had our bathrooms with, you know, early on you learned cold water and soap, right? Cold water and soap. And there hung the underwear that got stained by the tampon that didn't provide its function or the overnight pad that didn't provide full function. So I think this is great. And as a mother and I would look forward to having better undergarments that are going to protect us at the time of period. So I'm hope that
they come
up with the right technology that brings us to market.
Well, you know what I'm going to say. We can send a man to the moon. Now, come on. You know, we could take all of that technology and we could put this to really good use and really have an opportunity to come up with something that's sort of a period-proof panty that looks great, that makes us feel good, and that doesn't make us feel, you know, funkier than we already do. Because, honey, listen, we're already bloating and we're already feeling, you know, funky when we do have periods. So all we need is an uplift. And I think that technology is there to help us. Ooh, that reminds me. What about this Diva cup, the D-I-V-A cup? And CVS started carrying a silicone menstrual cup made by Diva cup. What is that?
So some cervical cups to help, tuck in the vagina and, you know, act as a reservoir for blood. Yes. So it's really, you know, not needing to use and discard pads and tampons. So it's reusable, cleanable. You tuck it in the vagina and it collects the blood, so to speak, and you take it out and clean it and reuse it. So when you think about what we were first introduced to with pads, and remember those little straps that you had to try to secure it into.
Lord. Don't,
and so
don't even remind me. Oh,
I know. I mean, I think we've made great strides, and I'm just excited that with further technology, we're going to have even greater improvements.
Why would a woman use a Diva cup? I mean, what's the gestalt behind that? What kind of, you know, woman is really interested in using the Diva cup?
I think the environmentalist woman is probably going to be first and foremost of saying, I don't want to discard the applicator and the pad or the tampon and introduce that into the waste of America. So the cup allows for, again, innumerable reuse, and it can be left up to 12 hours leak-free. It kind of, you know, tucks into the vagina maybe a little more effectively to it doesn't absorb the blood, but it captures the blood, so to speak, better than maybe a tampon would. So I think just the ease of placing it, the reliability of its use, and then the not needing to contribute to the waste.
Oh, how interesting. So really what the Diva Cup's doing is it's going to the place of sustainability. In other words, women who are looking to establish and maintain a more sustainable lifestyle, one with less waste, less of that carbon footprint. Oh, I like it. So now I know what's happening. All those women are going to REI all the time, get all that hiking stuff and get on out there in the outdoors, and all the rest of us who are interested in sustainability. What a fascinating thought. Finally, there's a brand new startup called Lola, L-O-L-A, and this was started by two young women who pitched their idea for, get this, a tampon delivery service. And believe it or not, they were able to raise the money to be able to get this thing going, and they were able to get that conversation happening with the investor just literally by grabbing a glass of water in front of the male investor, dunking one of their prototype tampons in it, and forcing the guy to look at it, saying, look, here's the deal. This is what it's doing in a woman's body. It's about absorbing liquid, and it's becoming bigger. And then they just sort of left it there in the middle of the table of the investor. They, $4.2 million later, they were rocking and rolling. You know, it takes a lot of chutzpah out there to get this point across and to message well. And I love the fact that women are really just sort of putting it out there saying, hey, you know, what's to lose anyway? If we don't have that conversation, what are we going to do? What do you think about that?
Yeah, again, I just think the creativity of this upcoming generation combined with technology and just, like you said, the chutzpah to say, let's think outside the box here and let's make it better and different. And I think this younger generation is going to figure out great solutions for managing, you know, a somewhat inconvenient problem. So if you can make it more convenient and more well managed, I think it's going to appear.
Okay, so more power to you out there, all of you with that great messaging going on. And just be courageous and put it out there, because Dr. Dupree and I say, we're right behind you, girlfriend, crying out loud. So we've been
Absolutely.
Talking to Dr. Barb Dupree, our go-to gynecologist, on all things women's sexual health. So important. Her book is Yes, You Can, Dr. Barb's Recipe for Lifelong Intimacy. Her website is Middlesex, that's M-I-D-D-L-E-S-E-X, capital M, capital D, MiddlesexMD.com. Oh boy, you've been learning all about the value and the purpose of orgasms and all things new thinking on the menstruation conversation. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds, even less, and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, can you leave a review as well? Hey, remember, my mom reads these things. Make it good. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD, and you can also check out our Her Radio Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.